What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Welcome, everybody, to Knife Talk. I'm back. I'm sorry. I've been gone for a few weeks. But I'm here, as always, with Jeff Fader, Fader Knives, Mareko Momasi of Momasi Fire Arts. And we're here every Monday. Even if one of us can't make it, the other two, they haul ass. They're here every week with the show. If you're a knife maker, into knives, whatever, this is the show, the only show to listen to. So thank you all for listening to us, listen to our ramblings every week. Jeff, how are things?
Things are fine. I want to know all about, who cares about me? I want to know what it's like being an international recording artist. Greg Lockwood has been gone for a few weeks recording his master opus in Wales with choirs, and we want to hear the whole thing.
I mean, this could be a whole show. I'm just super excited. I could easily talk for 2 hours, but people aren't here to listen to all this, so we'll maybe we can do a full blast and we can talk about in depth
in the books. We're doing it.
It's in the books. But in short, it's been an incredible couple of weeks, just totally living the dream. And you know, we started off with this little demo. And then we were like, okay, we can make this bigger. Let's add all these different. We added a choir. We added an orchestra. We added every. Yeah, it's just, and it's turned into this 8-minute crazy song, which starts with, you know, gently me on a piano starting, and by the end of the 8 minutes, all hell breaks loose, and it's a big one. So we did three songs in the studio, but that's the main song. This Town is the main one, and it was totally living the dream. The place there, so Rockfield, if for those who don't know, it's the mecca of rock and roll. It's where, you know, everything was done, right from, you know, Ozzy Osbourne and Bowie and you know, Iggy Pop and all these, you know, Bohemian Rhapsody, all these amazing things have been done in that studio, and it hasn't changed. You go in and it looks like it just looks old and shit, to be honest with you. but there's history there, and you feel it. You know, you could definitely feel it there, and it's a certain sound to the room. Where even now, I can put on songs, and I can hear that sound. It's like when you look, it's like, yep, that was recorded at Rockfield. So it's a magical place. So it's my feet haven't really touched the ground the whole time I've been here. And even tomorrow, we're going to sort of Abbey Road to get the mastering finished, and it's all a complete dream. All a complete dream.
Very cool.
Question for you: Rockfield, who owns it, and how do they keep it? What's the mindset of, like, not updating it?
They're farmers, so we all know about farmers diversifying and having to diversify. But these farmers did this in the 70s, and they were in a band themselves. They're two brothers, Kingsley and, I can't think of the other brother, but Kingsley's still alive. The other one isn't. And they were in a band. They wanted to record themselves. They couldn't afford to go anywhere, so they bought some kit and bought more and more kit, to the point where whereas they were recording their friends and they had more of an income recording than they did from farming. So they become the world's first residential studio. So people would come and stay while they finished the whole record, as opposed to going to, you know, London, one of the flashy studios where there'd be Temptations and the press would be there. Here, you're in the middle of nowhere. So they still own it. It's the same family still own it. And Kingsley, the owner, he'd come in every afternoon for a cup of coffee during the sessions. And he'd just tell me some of the stories from the past.
And, crazy.
And stuff that you couldn't really put on tape now. You know, it's just unbelievable what used to get on. You can imagine back in the 70s, you know. It's just a magical, magical place.
Wow.
That's how a trip.
How much longer do you have before it's all done, and then when does the single come out?
Mastering will be completed by Tuesday, so then it goes off to the press to be printed on CDs, and a very fast turnaround. So this will be launched. The release date is the 18th of November, so very, very quick.
Will you put the option to buy in the show notes of Knife Talk?
Podcast, of course. So people can buy it. Literally, I put it everywhere, believe me.
All right, just
want to
make sure.
It's going everywhere.
Just making sure.
Yeah, because the way this, the whole point of this is if people go to the website, they'll see that I just want a chart just because it's been a boyhood dream. So you have one hit at it, really. So there's been pre-orders for a number of weeks, possibly a couple of months now. And all these pre-orders are sort of activated on that one day, which is the 18th of November, and in the hope to get a good chart position on the 25th of November, which is the week after. Yeah.
Wow. You must be excited.
Amazingly. Like I said, my feet haven't touched the floor. Amazingly excited. But also full. As I was just saying to you, Jeff, before we come on air, been here for 2.5 weeks now, eaten out every night, and just, I need to have a sleep and have a vegetable, really.
One vegetable.
Feeling like crap.
Just so one vegetable.
When you come home, when you head back home, do you think you're going to have like a kind of a adrenaline dump? Or do you think you think it's going to be hard to go kind of back to normal life after being
I think it's going to be like coming home on holiday, isn't it? You've got that blue sort of, oh, this is my life now kind of thing, you know? But, it's fine.
These
it's fine.
Kids.
The thing is, the kids have gone back, so I'm looking forward to going back and obviously seeing them. So that, you know, there's a bonus there at least. Yeah.
Very good.
Anyway, we can get into detail on this another time because I could just, you know, completely sidetrack this whole show.
Well, you come on to Full Blast and we'll do a whole deep dive.
Let's do it. Okay.
Mareko, how the hell are you?
I'm doing all right. I'm actually, I got a little bit of a cold right now.
You just got high up on that mic real good. You gave that mic a lip lock. It was good.
Did I?
Yeah, you still are.
You still are.
Should I not? Do I need to turn it down a little bit?
Maybe just back off it.
Back off
maybe.
Of here, yeah.
Anyway, Mareko, are you back now? Because you've been traveling as well for a few weeks.
I am back.
Missed each other. You were on your way back. I was on my way out.
Ships in the night, man.
Exactly.
It's the trip was good. We talked about it a little bit last week. I had a lot of fun. It was kind of revitalizing in a way that I spend a lot of time in my shop by myself, and I'm a very extroverted person. Mm-hmm. And so it really energizes me to spend time around other people and laugh and have a good time and learn some things. And so, the trip was definitely good for me. I've been back and nothing really crazy. You know, we're kind of the end. We've already kind of, I don't know. I still have a few pieces I'm going to finish up and get out, but I've already kind of counted the year over basically at this point.
Really?
Yeah, it's great. It feels good. But at the same time, I'm still a little stressed in the way that I do have a few projects I want to finish up. I have some knives I need to do some spa, give some spa day loving to for some people. And I'm getting the calendar together for next year's Artisans and Steel calendar. The theme this next year is going to be culinary knives. So I've been working to get a hold of people to be part of that calendar. It's hard because there's just so many great culinary knife makers that it's hard to fit everybody. Or it's just not possible to fit everybody into one calendar. So I might have to start doing the culinary knives every other year, or incorporating them more frequently in other calendars, because I think I've done 4 calendars up to this point, and each one has had at least maybe one culinary knife maker in it, but that's still just not enough to show love.
This year's calendar is dead, is complete with chef knives.
Culinary knives, yeah, all chef's
culinary
knives.
Knives, sorry.
Yeah, probably not all chef's knives, but definitely all culinary knives.
Gotcha.
And so working on getting those people connected. I'm working on clearing up space, like cleaning up in the shop and kind of reorganizing the shop to make it a little bit more feng shui, and also to make room for a little 55 Anyang. 55 pounds, Anyang, and
well, you're getting an Anyang.
Yeah, I'm gonna get a little 55 pound Anyang from a friend who's just down the street from me, Chris Rowley, of NC Knife and Tool. He's a good guy and a talented maker.
That's exciting.
It is exciting.
You're kind of glossing over the fact that you're getting a power hammer. That's pretty exciting.
Yeah, no, it's cool. I mean, it's not a giant power hammer, but it's going to be great, because I'm trying to think of, like, what are changes I need to make if I think I want to continue doing this work for another 20 years down the road. And one of them is taking some of that forging work off of my body and putting it onto a tool of some sort. And so I obviously have the hydraulic press, but when it comes to forging blades, that's still a lot of physical work, and I'll still need to use the hand hammer and the anvil, for tuning things up or cleaning up the profile. But using that in kind of conjunction with the power hammer, especially the little 55, will really help with forging out those blades. And it'll also help with pattern control. You get a little bit more better control and cleanliness in forging when you're forging under a power hammer versus a press or by hand, especially when you're dealing with mosaic patterns. So I'm looking forward to that. Well, cool. And then the big project this last week has, in conjunction with the other stuff going on, is just replacing or fixing my squirrel cage ventilation fan. I underestimated how expensive ventilation fans are, and to replace that squirrel cage with the same thing from like Grainger or McMaster or something like that is like $350 to $550. And so I had to put some elbow grease into the thing and replace the axle broke on it. And so I had to get a new axle that the fan rolls on and holds the pulley and all that stuff. And I went and I had an option to use either drill rod or just like hot rolled or cold rolled mild steel. And I actually went with the W1 drill rod because you had to get a 3-foot length, and I didn't need the excess like 18 or 20 inches of mild steel rod. But if it was, the W1, which is basically like W2 high carbon steel.
So it's usable in the waste.
Yeah, so I can turn those into some nice little forged blades. So even though I think the hot rolled was $20 or $22 and the W1 was $40, so it costs basically twice as much. But I'll be able to take half of it and make use of it somewhere else and make that money back. Gotcha. So
yeah.
But it's coming together nicely, and I'm excited to get it rolling again, because properly ventilated grinding room is super important.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So amazing. You're getting set for Christmas already. 7 weeks today, Christmas, by the way.
Yeah.
But I don't want to put a damper on everybody. But 7 weeks. Anyway, we've got questions. We've got a bunch of questions. But before we do, let's tell everyone about Evenheat. Evenheat, they make the world's best knife ovens. We've all got them. We know how great they are. But we've managed to get a discount for you. So if you go to knifetalk.net/heat, you'll be able to get $75 off and free shipping in the US. That's by shopping at Soul Ceramics, and they're a distributor of Evenheat. We all know how great they are. Let's get on with some questions then, shall we?
Before we get into questions, I wanted to bring up just real quick Tom of it's Crooked River Forge. He competed on Forge and Fire, but he's been battling cancer for the last few years, I believe, and he just lost his battle. I think yesterday. So I just want to send love to his family and his loved ones that, you know, are obviously mourning him right now. And he's a really great guy. Looking through his feed and interacting with him personally, he's just been nothing but super positive through all of this. So go over to Crooked River Forge, and just if you've had a chance to meet him, he's had an impact on you. Go send him, to the memory of him and to his wife, to see all these kind messages of interactions with Tom, because it's, you never know when you're gonna go, it's been amazing to watch him cope and deal with this, all of this, with grace, with as much grace as he has had, because it's hard to, I can't even imagine what it's like to just be like, I basically am gonna die any minute, and then try to continue to conduct yourself in a somewhat normal way, in the day to day, right? So,
Yeah. Good dude. Yeah. I had a number of little conversations with him, and it is a very, very sad thing. And obviously, we send our, and a lot of people have been sending me messages about it. And, you know, good. He's a great guy, and he'll be very missed in this community. And is,
for
is,
sure.
We're all sending our positive love towards him and his family. So.
Yeah. Thoughts with the family, definitely. Yeah. Okay. Well, we've had a question from Crooked Creek Knives. Hey, cuties, thank you for the hours of quality entertainment. Really? He's got a question for consideration. What are your realistic expectations of a knife? You've talked of butchers constantly sharpening their knives to super steels you barely touch. Last night processed a deer with a leaf spring blade. He said, I understand the problems with salvage steel and had to strop halfway through. There's a joke there. Is it realistic to make carbon steel blades that process multiple animals or chop hundreds of pounds of onions without touching them? What are your thoughts? So let's start by breaking this down a bit more. So a carbon steel blade, what is the sort of hardness that you guys would generally go for?
I'm typically shooting for like 60 to 62 Rockwell. Because my culinary knives typically are not hard use knives. And if I had a knife that was going to be hard used, I would probably temper things back just a little bit or harden from a slightly lower temperature. And try to shoot for more around 60, 58 range, for just a little bit more toughness, but still quality, ability to hold a decent edge.
Yeah. Jeff, your bull elk knives, what are you shooting for?
Well, I mean, it depends on the steel, but I'm usually in the 59. 59 is kind of where I want to be, especially for culinary stuff. You know, the weirdest part is like, actually, Josh Smith was just saying that he's got a new program where you're going to need your knife sharp and send it to me. And it was very, very good because it was this concept of like, look, let's just face it. These things need to be sharpened in order to meet the expectations that you're looking for. Knives got to be sharp. So knives got to be sharpened. So I think the expectation is it all depends on what you do. I mean, I was dealing with some butchers who they sharpen their knives more than twice a day. You know, they're constantly like breaking down animals and blah, 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 blah. And it's very like, you know, it's a whole production. So they were sharpening their knives down to like, you know, unrecognizable, you know, toothpicks.
Yeah.
And it's like, it all depends on what you want to do. There are companies out there now selling replaceable blades, like X-Acto knives for hunting because it's like, why bother sharpening when you can just like throw that blade, discard the blade and put like if you go to a doctor, they're using surgical scalpels and the scalpels are rechanged. They're not sharpening scalpels. They're throwing them out and getting new ones. So, and I mean, it all depends on what your expectation is, I would think.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, yeah, pretty much like you said, you know, there's always that trade off between sort of hardness and durability. And it's, you know, interesting what you said there about, you know, butchers, they'll use a knife and they're sharpening so often that it goes down to a toothpick. But if we're looking at something like a chef knife, which is used in the home, you know, they'll last a lifetime without that happening. So it completely depends on, I mean, he's talking here about, you know, processing deer and stuff. So with a carbon blade. So yeah, like you, I'd shoot for sort of 59 and so on. But yeah, it just needs constant. It will need constant, constant sharpening.
What
yeah.
is it? What is it about the deer or the animals that makes that that dulls? Is it what is dulling the knife on like something like an animal?
I suppose they're touching bone a lot, aren't they? And bone right. would be almost like a ceramic. You know, it's gonna just dull your edge.
Yeah, I would also agree. I think it's the contact with the bones. Because, I mean, if you had a choice of a cutting surface, you wouldn't use a bone, right? You would use wood, like a wood cutting board, right? And it's just, and obviously, I don't think the bone is necessarily harder than the material and the blade, but it is a harder material than what you would typically be cutting on. And we got to remember that at the apex of our blade geometry after they're sharpened, while the steel is maybe a certain high hardness and it's got carbides in it that help also with retaining kind of an edge and with wear resistance, you know, you're impacting those things against something hard. They're eventually, it's part of regular maintenance is that those wear down, they get abused and used, and sharpening is just a regular part of taking care of your knife, like changing the oil in your car. Honestly, like, I don't know how people, and maybe it was Ginsu who did this shit, but it's like people have been marketed into the idea that if it's a high quality knife and it's, or it's an expensive knife, it never needs to be sharpened. And that's not fucking realistic. I mean, you still got to change the fucking oil in a Bugatti, right? Otherwise that thing is going to blow up. And it's just, yeah. it's just part of just owning the tool and having a relationship with that tool and taking care of it in a meaningful way so that you can keep using that thing over and over again.
It's interesting you bring up Ginsu because I've always been fascinated with Ginsu because that was really one of the first, I mean, growing up in the 70s and 80s, that was one of the first knives that was marketed generally to people at home watching TV. I mean, you didn't see Wusthof ads on TV. You didn't see these Sabatier ads. You saw Ginsu. And the idea was is they were really marketing a knife to people that they knew wouldn't sharpen knives anyway. So we know you're not going to sharpen a knife. So why even... So don't here, you don't even have to sharpen this one. It's going to stay sharp. And he's cutting through shoes, and they're cutting through cans. And I'll never forget the cutting through shoes and then through a tomato. And then it's like... And then the cans. And it's just like they used their fucking heads, which was like Americans don't like to sharpen knives. They don't know how to sharpen knives. So let's give them a knife they don't have to sharpen. We're going to market as you don't have to sharpen this knife.
And if you look at, you know, shopping channels now, that they've always got knives on now, you know, it's probably one of the most popular things I've ever thought.
My family always had those, and they have a different type of, it's not like a serration, it's almost like this laser cutting tooth. It's like these, like, it's a finer thing that a grinder isn't, or some kind of grinder, who knows what kind of grinder is doing it, but I mean, it was something that overtook the idea of what you need in the kitchen.
Okay, comprehensive answers there for Crooked Creek Knives. Who wants to take the next one?
I'll take it. I think it's Curse Edge Knives. He says, "Hey dudes, great show. Been listening to the archives. Lone working 8 hours a day. You are three of the voices in my head." All right, so the question. Back to my question. I have started playing with Damascus/laminated steels. Laminated steels by hand, Mr. Malmasi. Oh, apparently this is targeted towards me. Oh, sorry. No, it's not. All right. Mr. Malmasi spoke about the unnecessary cleanup between forge welds on a previous show. Any chance he could elaborate, please? I remove all decarb and scale and grind flat between welds, which makes takes some time. I'd like to speed up my process. Great show. Going to start a journal and soon so I can keep up with the hints and tips. I think he's making a diary joke. Always a great show. Cheers, guys. All right, so he's asking about cleanup between materials. So in my initial billet layup, or actually, Jeff, do you have anything you want to say about your Damascus layups?
I don't fucking lay anything up. I've laid up.
I don't want to just jump. Assume that.
All right, that's fine.
This is all.
I tell you what I would do is I would use combat abrasives in between my layups. And if you go to combatabrasives.com, put in the promo code KnifeTalk15, you're going to get 15% off all your belts and your abrasives. Back to you, Mareko.
That is 100% what I do, except for in my initial layup. So I'm never worried about small burrs or mill scale from wherever I'm buying my steel from. Sometimes I even just, like, if it's got a sticker on it, I don't even give a shit about the sticker. One thing I will grind off, if there's anything on there, is paint. Because some paints have chemicals or additives, like potentially like zinc, that will keep the material from welding together properly. So if there is paint, I'll probably clean the paint off. But other than that, I'm not worried about anything. I don't do any pre-grinding of my bar stock before my initial weld-up. This is the very first weld-up that leads into your Damascus pattern. Now, after that, I definitely clean off the forge scale, but there are a couple different ways you can do it. You can do the traditional way, which is hitting it on your combat abrasives and ripping off that forge scale bark. That's that black, heavy bark forge scale that builds up on the outside of your billet, and clean it up. If I know I'm going to go through several welding processes, as in like at least three and upward and anything above, then probably that first round of welding, I'll just clean off. Like, I'll clean off basically everything, like 99%. But sometimes there's little spots where forge scale is just a little bit deeper than everything else. And it honestly is not worth chasing. It's not necessary to chase it, especially if you're going to go through a couple more forge welding processes. The other way of cleaning up that forge scale is to use phosphoric acid. So you can go to Home Depot or Lowe's and you can get, I think the company is Clean Strip, and they make a chemical that is a phosphoric acid-based chemical that's meant for preparing concrete or steel for paint and etching. And so it's called concrete and steel paint prep, I believe. And it's kind of like a blue or a green kind of shape or a color. And anyways, I usually put maybe a pint of that to a gallon of water. So I dilute it back, because you don't need all of it to get it to eat that forge scale off. Now, if you want it to happen really quick, then yeah, you're going to want all of it. But I usually try to time it. If I'm going to use the phosphoric bath, I'm going to finish my forging at the end of the day or not worry about coming back to it until the next day, so that it sits in a tube with that phosphoric acid, and it basically eats it all away, so that the next day when I come in, I can clean off that forge scale with a, like, with a toothbrush. And then, but even after I clean it, you know, rinse off all the forge scale, there's sometimes is a little bit of forge scale or even some, I don't know, dark stuff, dark etching from on the surface. So I'll still hit it either with a wire wheel or with a Scotch-Brite belt just to brighten it up and clean up that surface. But then I'll just cut it up and start stacking them back together that way. But that is my general cleanup between forge welding rounds. I guess the last thing I'll add is when I do my final, what I know is going to be my final round of forge welding, whether it's mosaic tiles or whatever, I like to clean the material up at least to 220 grit, because it's just the cleaner and the flatter and the truer your surfaces are that are going to be forge welded together, the easier it will, and more readily it will come back together and want to stick together. And there's, you know, it doesn't take long to clean things up to 220 grit. And I've had things fail on me from trying to go for too rough of a finish, a cleaning finish before that final weld up. And it's honestly, it's just me either trying to experiment and see what I can get away with and learning the hard way and discovering that that doesn't work, or just, I guess, being stingy on time or material or, you know, belts or whatever. I'm trying to conserve belts or something maybe. Mm-hmm. But I found that you just got to take it to, like, especially at that final round, you really just got to take it to 220 to get things to stick nice. Because otherwise you're taking an unnecessary gamble or raising the risk, I guess, generally, of things not sticking together properly.
And losing all that time and work you've put in. Yeah,
exactly. And losing all that.
Have you ever noticed... Oh, sorry.
No, go on. I was just, again, another very comprehensive answer.
That's it. The show's over. We did it.
Yep. Oh, fucking good. Let's go. What I was going to say is I've noticed sometimes when I heat treated stainless steel, if there's even Sharpie marker on it, the Sharpie marker doesn't burn off. Like, I had to, like, really be careful in regards to that because their Sharpie doesn't, you know, or ink, some inks don't burn off like you'd think they would at 2,000 degrees.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
That's, I mean, do you have any, why is that happening?
I have no idea why that's happening. I use the industrial Sharpie markers and I have sat there and watched like writing on the outside of the billet continue to stay there until the billet was, at least, you know, 1800 degrees, close to 2000 degrees. It's pretty astonishing. But I haven't noticed that marker has an effect on how well things, at least a standard Sharpie pen, at how it affects things forge welding together.
Well, it definitely acts as a resist to a certain degree.
Yeah, I've drawn like patterns and designs on Damascus, and then etched the Damascus in ferric, and basically used the ink as a selective resist, and then clean the Damascus or clean the whole thing off, clean the ink off, and you have these bright areas that aren't etched, and then you have these deep textural areas that have been etched. Yeah,
if
it's interesting.
Heat treating, which I always do before I grind anyway, I always use my Broadbeck surface grinder and take that to about 220 anyway, simply because a lot of the time they'll be sort of waxed, or the material will be waxed, or it'll have some sort of coating on sometimes,
sure.
And sometimes for like a plasticky coating. So I always use a surface grinder quickly anyway, just really quickly, just to just give it everything, make everything look clean. Before I put it in the oven anyway. But Broadbeck Ironworks do a great surface grinder. Really cheap, and they'll work with any grinder as well, because those arms are universal. And if you want to hear the story of Broadbeck, listen to Jeff's Full Blast this week, because Ryan and Vince are on there, and I was amazed by their sort of origin story of, you know, how they met and how they started the company and so on. It's a really good listen. So go and listen to that too.
And if we're going to do it, November 20th through the 27th is the Black Friday sale. So guys, if you're going to get yourself on board with Broadbeck, if you're thinking about it, if you're thinking about it and you're thinking to yourself, well, now what are we going to do? If you go get yourself some of that Broadbeck Ironworks, 2x72, and know that they also have a discount not on the Black Friday special, $200 off if you use Knife Talk 200 for the Max Premium Mega, and Knife Talk 100 gets you a discount $100 off on their sharpening system, surface grinder, and sewing and leather sewing machines. But get involved with their they got a great Black Friday special, and it's going to be very, very soon. So.
Right. Cool. Okay, we've got another question from, I think it's Must Spell Knives. Hey guys, good work on the podcast. I have a question. Have you ever had Corby bolts that are hollow when you grind into them? He's bought about 200 pieces and 80% of them he couldn't use. Could you recommend someone who sells solid Corby screws? Well,
so,
I mean,
this
has happened. I've had crappy ones that have, you know, they've sheared themselves, the head will shear off. When you're trying to screw them in, but I've never had them hollow once ground.
I have, and really? I actually have gotten a knife from a very well-known knife maker who he ground through the Corby and left it with the hole in it. So, So Corby bolts are machined, and different companies make them. And when these knife suppliers get them, they get them in batches, and they can't possibly know. So if you don't know what a Corby bolt is, it's two. It's like a male and a female, and then they have a shank, and then they have the where you screw it in, and then once it's all glued up, you can kind of cut it off, and it looks like a rivet. But really, what it is a mechanical fastening device. Now it's the female end that it should end the it should be solid at the end of the threads. But sometimes the way these guys mill them, or wherever they're being milled, they go past. The threading. So if you're grinding off and you're leaving yourself I don't know, like eighth of an inch of the Corby itself. Yeah, the head. You'll see a little hole. I've had that happen a pile of times. And then what I've done in the past is, and these knife companies who are getting them, they can't test every single one. What I was starting to do was I would take a little nail and I would stick it into the female end of the Corby bolt and then kind of do a rough measurement just to make sure that they were, that I wasn't going to find one of those. Cause it's a huge pain. They're not hard to remove. Actually, they're pretty easy to remove if you drill a little hole in there and then you get a reversing. They have these, they're these tools that it's like a screw
extractor,
puller, screw extractor. They come out pretty easy as long as, you know, you put a, you, if you, here's how you do it. You drill a hole through that hole, then you put clamps on your blade. If it's assuming that it's glued together, you want to put clamps on the blade because if you want to, you don't want to start jerking around on it. And then all of a sudden the whole, your scales come off. But if you can drill through the hole, use the screw extractor, pull them out and then replace them, which I've done in the past. I can't suggest a person that, are a company that sells them, sometimes they get bad batches. What I would say is figure out how many you have and call the company up and say, I've just bought all these and they are bad. And usually they'll replace them. Yeah. So I've had that happen a few times. And the good thing is if you tell the companies, all of a sudden they start to rattle the cages where they got them.
Sure.
And then they're going to be, because they don't want to give you a refund and they don't want to replace them. So they become aware that there is a manufacturing problem and then they'll kind of take care of it.
I have a question for you guys. When you're using your Corby bolts, do you ever trim down the either the male or the female side to make sure that you're losing as little of the cap as you possibly can, or the head of the screw?
Yeah, I do on table knives sometimes if they're thinner. And I've got some sacrificial ones where I've cut them right down and I've just used a Corby and I've put like a place but a screwdriver, a slot, you know?
I got you.
So I use them quite often if I want to finish the handle, you know, to a certain sort of level before putting the Corbys in and grinding them back down.
Sure.
But yeah, so I have done, but generally with most knives, the thickness is about right. You can just put them in and grind off and you're done.
Sure.
One thing I'll say about Corbys, and I love them, and I stick to brass for a couple reasons. One, I think the color is really nice, but also they're easier to machine, I find, and they're easier to kind of work with. And you don't end up with like a kind of like a proud lump after you've sanded them down.
Stainless ones are a bitch to work with.
Because
you try to get a decent finish on them, it generally sort of erodes away all the material around it first. So it's horrible.
Yeah, you get a lump. You get a lump. One thing I will suggest is be aware when you're using, and a lot of times you can buy different sized shanks. So the female end is really what's supposed to be going through your steel. And I think about it like I want the Corby bolt to be countersunk enough that I'm covered all the layers of material. And then it's going, the shank part, the female end that has the shank, I would guess, is going all the way through. So when I'm tightening it down, like the steel is kind of laying on the shank itself, not on the threads. You can get caught up thinking, all right, well, I got a couple threads in, that's good enough. But you really want to kind of try to figure out a system in place where the thickness of your handle material, the thickness of your steel, and corresponds with the Corby bolt, so it's sitting correctly, because you just don't want to be like on thin ice with those things.
Sure. Yeah. And I generally, because, you know, working in batches, everything should be pretty much the same. I'll generally just set like a depth thing on my drill press. So when I'm drilling, I know that the shoulder is going to go to a certain depth, you know, and then, you know, it's simple dry fit up to make sure they'll work. Yeah.
I have a sneaky trick. If just in case your handle scale, this is a real helpful episode. We're not doing any dick jokes. We're serious and we're talking all real shit. If you, for some reason, you drilled your holes, you know, you have your steel, your full tang knife, you have the holes, you have heat treated, you're putting the handle scales together, and if there's just some little inaccuracy, maybe it's your drill table, maybe it's the scales or whatever. If you get some of those carbide Dremel bits, the bigger ones, and if you put them in your drill press, they go slow enough usually that you can wallow out a hole easier on the hardened steel with those. I've been doing that lately, and it's been like, if I have a little bit of a, if I want to make a little bit of slot, if there's a, like a little bit of tightness that I don't want to be fooling around when I'm gluing up, I put one of those Dremel bits. It's not a Dremel bit. It's like a die grinder bit. You can get, you know, kits of die grinder bits. You know, they have like, it's, I guess it's like a quarter inch shank or something like that. They fit in your drill bit, and your drill bit is going a lot slower than a die grinder is. I have the die grinders, and they're going like so fast you think the whole world's going to end. You know, and if you put it in a, just a regular drill press, you're getting enough bite and torque that you can really move in a little bit of material without overheating the steel, without putting yourself in danger, and you can make fast work, real fast work, without having to heat up your tang or having to soften it or anything like that. Mm. That was a move.
Top tips.
That was a move. I got a couple more, but I think we gotta you know, how many more years can we do this?
yeah. You know, edge them out a bit.
We got a long way to go. We can't give them all away in this episode.
All right, let's do one more question. Oh, Jeff,
but,
you want to read
well,
the
actually,
next one?
But Marika, you use Corby's. You use Corby's for your butt caps.
Yeah, I've used them. Yeah,
that wasn't even that funny, you fucking wacko. That wasn't even that good. I mean, it wasn't even like...
Screw them in right tight in there.
Now it's funny.
I have used them as what I like to call pommel nuts.
Now it's getting funny. Or Craig started
or,
and now
or a tang nut.
Your caps and tang nuts. You get to get the yeah. fucking deeper.
But I've also just used them in the tang, like a conventional way, as well. And when I'm doing full tang knives, I 100% use Corby's. Though I'm about to run out of my my bronze Corby's. I had a custom set of Corby's built made for me, and I'm almost out of them now. I'm a little bit scared, but yeah, I use Corby's. I use the, what is it? The 3/16 shaft, for the quarter inch head. Oh yeah. The quarter inch head. So the kind of the, like the smaller Corby's, but not the smallest, of course. The mid size, I guess the mid range.
The weird thing is when you're buying them Corby's, like the smaller ones are more expensive than the bigger ones. I found with the brass.
They're probably a little trickier and time-consuming
yeah,
to make.
To manufacture, I would have thought, yeah. Yeah,
I don't like that.
Yeah, I've often wondered how they're made, actually. But
they're machined.
Yeah, but even so, I'm like, yeah, milled, like a lathe, what, you know, it's, yeah. Cause they're so small and intricate, you know, and those tiny little threads.
And the price is going up.
Yeah.
Price is going up.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we can keep. I mean, we can. Here's what we can do, guys. We have listener feedback. We also have tough dilemmas, or we can keep going with questions. It's up to you.
Let's do one more question, then maybe we can do some listener feedback. If you want to do Paul Jansen.
Okay. Paul Jansen says, I've been starting to do some copper Damascus knives, and I've been using 15N20 as an outer layer and 1084 for the core, so after the etch, there's a contrast in all the layers. Instead of using two high-carbon steels and burning through my supply of knife-quality steels, could I use mild steel on the outer layers and just make sure I have high carbon as the core? Will the forge welding be different using mild steel, and would it quench differently too? I know Jeff thinks they're the CrossFit of the knife world, but it's what the customer wants. I am for what the customer wants, so that's all you, Marika. I don't know what the fuck he's talking about.
That's me again.
Yeah,
the carbon or the mild steel potentially can cause an issue. Although I'm trying to think. No, actually, it probably won't cause too much of an issue. The big issues, especially when it comes to quenching, is things transforming at different rates from each other. Your mild steel is commonly used, actually, commonly to, what is it, to jacket like a sanmai, especially in even Japanese traditional Japanese style blades, but typically also in those more Japanese style, the core steel they're using is something that quenches fast, And I think there might be something to that, because I know people who make Sanmai with, like, say, 50-100 as the core, have had issues, even when the 50-100 is, like, forged down to maybe only a 16th of an inch thick, or thinner, actually, as the core, causing issues with the jacketing material on the outside not transforming at the same rate. And I know it seems wasteful to use the carbon steel, but you know that the carbon steel is going to transform at expand and contract at a similar rate as the core material that you're using, and even the 15 and 20 that you're using is cladding on either side of the core. I actually think that the potential issue will be the copper and how the copper is going to adhere, and also how it affects, when it's going through the heat up and the expansion and then the contraction of the material when you quench it again. But I guess you could also just try it. But you do see a lot of people using high carbon steel in with the Damascus, I guess. If you're going to use any kind of quote unquote low carbon steel, I would maybe go for 1045, but maybe not necessarily mild steel, because that is just such a low carbon content that it could be an issue in the heat treating process for sure. The 1045 you could still use as part of your patterning aspect without wasting good high carbon steel or blade steel and the cladding, where it's never going to see basically any quote unquote action.
And charge these motherfuckers. That's what it comes down to. It's like, you know, pennies on the dollar. Don't fuck around. And when I make jokes, I'm making jokes. That's all. Go ahead. Go where the money is. I'm with you. But charge these motherfuckers.
He's mentioning copper Damascus, so I'm assuming that's just copper way away from the edge. That's not doing any sort of edge work at all. So sure. Is this purely decorational? Is there any other purpose to it?
There is not. No, right, it's definitely aesthetic. And it's uncommon. I mean, it's becoming more common as more and more people are using it. I think if anything, like, copper is so reactive that the galvanic reaction that happens between materials that allow them to etch is a lot more intense with copper included in the material. So you wouldn't want copper to be a knife that's, like, constantly exposed to moisture, either on a boat or as a dive knife or anything like that.
Yeah.
Because that kind of that electrical reaction that causes the materials to etch will continue to corrode way more aggressively with the copper, because it is so much more conductive than even, like, the difference between 15 and 20 and 1084 or stainless versus carbon steel, you know. So that is definitely something to take into consideration.
Do you think that copper, because, you know, in cooking, a lot of times when people are making egg whites, they're whipping up egg whites, you use a copper bowl because of the reactive quality. Do you think in a knife that there'd be any kind of reactive qualities to the food?
Sure. Anytime moisture is bridging those lines, say on the face of the blade, there's a vein of copper running along the face, and then right next to it, adjacent to it, is any kind of, and honestly, carbon steel or 15 and 20 or whatever. Anytime there's any kind of moisture kind of bridging those pieces, there's a potential galvanic issue. And it's, I think, a smart move would honestly be to kind of use nickel as a barrier between copper and any other materials, for that reason. Because the copper in direct contact with kind of a more conventional steel is definitely going to, over time in use, is going to cause a lot of issues. Even if it's in a hunting knife and you're using the knife to skin or gut the animal, you know, it's exposed to all the blood or whatever kind of other stuff is coming off the animal, and that moisture creating a connection basically between the copper and the other cladding material, can encourage that kind of that electronic process of etching the blade and kind of corroding at those weld joints. Because that ultimately that's what's happening is when we're etching a blade, especially a Damascus blade, we're intentionally corroding and etching the surface to reveal the pattern. And with more conductive materials like copper, it is a lot more aggressive, even outside of a kind of a standard copper etch. It could just be salt water. It could be whatever, you know. It could just be your hand oils that got left on the blade, and that will create a higher level of corrosion or etching than it would have typically have caused in a different blade.
And then all your dinner is going to taste like a bag of pennies.
Yeah.
Sucking on a bag of pennies.
Yeah.
Here you go.
So let's put the bets in. Which dick is going to be the first to have
the fuck?
Two copper veins running through their cheek of their knife.
What the fuck? They go into
stick an LED in the handle, and they'll use their fucking Total Boat or whatever clear resin to stick an LED in there. And when you cut a lemon, it's going to light up the LED.
Why are you saying
Son Dick is going to do that soon, I'm telling
Who's
you.
Who's the dick?
It's the kind of thing I would have done. Oh. But yeah.
You can still do it. Yeah. You can still do it.
I can imagine somebody doing it. Yeah, it's the lemon light on the end.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big money on new windows now at Menards. Update your home with vinyl windows from Jeld-Wen. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on Jeld-Wen windows in store or view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more window deals happening this week now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Well, we can go questions. We can go. We can keep talking about your veiny dicks if you want, or we can talk about tough dilemmas. Listener feedback. Keep going. Whatever.
Listener feedback. Then let's do it. I tell you what. Before we do, let me tell everybody about TexasFarrierSupply.com. They've got everything you could possibly need as a knife maker or even as a farrier. But what they do definitely stock is Indasa Rhinoet, which is the stuff that dreams are made of. It's the sandpaper of the superstars out there. It's the stuff that everybody uses because it's the best. It saves you time, saves you money. Get some of that Indasa Rhinoet from TexasFarrierSupply.com. As I say, they've got everything you could possibly need. If you use Knife Talk 10, you'd also get 10% off at the checkout too. That's a hell of a deal.
And it looks like they just had their hammer in, yep. Which we had mentioned and talked about before. And it looked like it was a good time. Jay Nielsen was there. Looked like they had some good demonstrators doing some fun stuff. So congrats, guys. I hope it was a good time.
Cool.
Very good. Well, if you guys want to send messages or interact with the podcast, go on Instagram and follow us, Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram, where you can send questions, tough dilemmas, listener feedback. Here's some listener feedback. This one's from Nick Alpin. Guys, quick aside, I'm in the Orlando burbs with nobody to talk to or learn from about knives. So it's me in the garage figuring things out, making mistakes, and improving over time. That a bit about Fiona had me laughing. The last episode was great.
And there were bitch.
Just let me finish this story, you fucking guy, because I got a lot of problems too. The last episode was great, and there's always nuggets that help us stock removal guys out. Thanks for taking my dilemmas as well. Hope you have a great week. Yeah, the Fiona episode was funny, but I did get some not happy people too. So
Really? Okay. Well, maybe that's in the feedback, is it?
Well, okay. It's fine. It was funny, but, you know, let's get onward. Ugly Duck Knives and Leather says, listening to the first episode based on recommendations from Stu at Rule 9 Knives made me sorry I never listened sooner. Belated thanks for doing this. Ronald Knives says, I can't say I've ever asked too many, quote, background check questions about a customer looking to buy knives from me. I guess in a few episodes ago, we were talking about background checks. Or not, we weren't saying it, but people were wondering what you do, you know, what you do with your customers. I don't necessarily think too much about what they want a custom knife for. That said, the guy who is reaching out wanting a, quote, unmarked, untraceable hatchet. The guy who reached out wanting a, quote, I guess is asking Ronald Knives for an unmarked, untraceable hatchet that could fit under the front seat of his truck and needs to be capable of coping through a human femur, does not own one of mine, and hopefully never will.
Jeez. Oh, my God.
Wow. Yeah.
If you're going to use it to hurt somebody, wouldn't you want it to be a generic item rather than a very unique one-of-a-kind piece? Yeah.
An expensive custom knife build for Mr. Dharma, please.
Right. Yeah. And probably, you know, probably don't say human. Yeah, I would have. That's like. Plumley Knife says, Fat Fiona put the chips down, had me laughing so hard I had to turn you guys off for a moment to regain my composure at work. It's hard to make pretty welds if you're crying. Thank you for another success. I also tuned into Jeff's Instagram live before you guys recorded last week when bolognese was brought up and someone described it as Italian chili. I later asked some Italian friends who grew up on Long Island if that was a good description. The husband was so mad and offended, and it cracked me up.
That's awesome.
And this is probably my favorite listener feedback of all time. All time. This one comes from Facundo Roar from Argentina. This is fucking awesome. I'm catching up on the podcast. It's been a couple months of hard work around here. I want to thank you for all things I learned from this podcast. For example, I just learned that kidney stones come through your dick. It makes so much fucking sense. It's a fact that I had never stopped to think about. LOL. Have a great week. I hope I can catch up for the next Monday. Greetings from Argentina. I could not find which episode, Craig, we were talking about where kidney stones come from.
Yeah.
And you seem to have thought that kidney stones go out your butt. And
I think I said but shitting out a kidney stone. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You had no idea.
I'm with this guy. I'd never really given any thought to it. Yeah.
Well, I that was a funny episode. I couldn't remember which one it was, but that we were teaching a lot of people about biology here on Knife Talk, ladies and gentlemen.
Let's go back to this. How big is a kidney stone?
Well, my old coworker brought in one that it was like a ninja star. They get big. I haven't had one, but like motherfuckers got big. He brought it in and it was like a ninja star for a mouse. It was terrible, terrible.
The ClevelandClinic.org says most kidney stones are about the size of a chickpea. Also known as black eyed peas.
Dude!
Wow, that's a yowza. Fair size.
That's huge. That would not feel good.
And they can be as small as a grain of sand. And obviously not being passed, but as large as a golf ball. Which is why you go in with like ultrasound or laser technology and blast that bitch up.
Yeah, we're going to stretch out that dick hole.
I'll be spread eagled on my laser just in case before I go to the doctors.
Talk about a Corby bolt.
X this, motherfucker.
Oh, boy.
It's good to be back.
Oh, so funny. Oh, God. So we can go tough dilemmas, more listener feedback, more questions. It's up to you guys.
You know what we've got.
We got good ones.
Let's do a tough dilemma. Okay.
We haven't had any in a while. The first one comes from Leonardo Lee. Leonardo Lee, I have a dilemma. I work for a guy who runs a small company, four of us. and it's not a very well-run company. Constantly on the verge of bankruptcy, and we often have to take on new work to pay wages owed from other jobs, and then have to do both jobs at the same time. The boss is a good man and a friend, very knowledgeable about the industry, and good at convincing clients to start work. But because things are poorly run, they're often up very frustrated. I'm effectively the best and most reliable worker, mostly because I show up on time and not high, which, God bless you for that.
It's a low bar set.
Well, the funny part was, is it was a real pathetic humble brag. It's like, I'm not high and I show up, so I'm the best guy. So my dilemma is this: do I stay and put up with the nonsense? The pay is pretty good, but inconsistently spaced. He currently owes me a sizable sum. Do I leave and likely condemn the business to failure? We're in the middle of a huge project, which, if it fails, will ruin the company. Is there a third option you gents can think of? Cheers from rainy London.
I mean, it sounds like he's potentially in a position of leverage. And I don't know.
Not if you're fucking, not if you can't pay. If the guy can't pay, no, he's not in a position of leverage either.
Right. I guess not. But I was going to say then, like, if the job relies on him that much, he can leverage that against the guy and be like, look, I need to get fucking paid because I have my own bills. And I mean, we can't get a, I don't understand these businesses that think they can get away with not paying people. And I know that the money flow is sometimes an issue, but that like, how do you expect to retain any employees who you have to take the time to train and everything if you're not paying them?
Yeah. He's got to speak to his boss, hasn't he, and explain that, you know, this can't go on, and he's considering other work somewhere else. And, you know, if this boss has got any sense about him, and he knows that Leonardo's the man and he's the one keeping the business afloat, he'll do all he can to keep him, which would mean maybe if Leonardo has ideas how the business could be run, maybe he could sort of adapt some of these ideas. You know, it's got to be a sort of conversation, say, look, maybe I can help, we can sort of do this together kind of thing, or I'm gone, you know?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, he doesn't... I want to backstep what I was saying just a little bit. It sounds like I was trying to say, like, be threatening. And I don't think you have to be threatening. I think the facts are just very straightforward. You need to get paid for the work you're doing. Otherwise, you can't keep... Like, why would you continue working in a job you're not getting paid for?
Yeah, yeah.
I've been involved with a number of small businesses where similar things like this happen. And there are certain bosses who are just, they're just, you know, there are certain businesses where it's not just easy. Like a lot of contracting businesses, there's always these negotiations. There's, you know, you're going over your bid, you're going under your bid, you're getting, you know, you're doing well on a job or you're behind on a job. And there's all these weird gray areas. And some of these bosses are, it's like clockwork. It's like every single time. I mean, this is just they make decisions. They make bad decisions based on what they know at the time. And it's a cycle of making bad decisions. My opinion is this guy's never going to change. And that's just the way it is. A lot of these small, and frankly, I've been in these places where I'm sympathetic to the bosses. But it gets to the point where as soon as you start to allow them to not pay you, and they start to realize that you really want to be there enough that you'll be okay with it, that's when it gets problematic. And I think that, unfortunately, small businesses, you know, they're not equipped to deal with these things. And I mean, look at other big jobs where they're laying people off and they're, you know, things aren't going well. And, you know, everyone, the other thing is when you're at a job, everyone seems to think that they know better than the boss. Until they're in the position. I've been in so many welding shops where the guys that I'm working with, they say how much better that they could run the shop. How much better, if I was running it, things would be different. And then they get out of their job and then it's like they're just sitting on the couch watching Oprah Winfrey. You know, it's like, I mean, I'm serious. I mean, it's like, it's easier said than done.
But at the same time, Leonardo does say that this guy is a friend of his as well, which makes things a little bit more awkward. I just think you just need to be open with him and explain to him that this can't go on. If you can help in any way, you've got some ideas, which you clearly have. And if he takes them on board, great. If he doesn't, then he may think, well, now it's time to move on.
I think the most important thing is, in my opinion, as I would do, you know what? I, I can say that I would try to set boundaries, but I know that I could totally see myself being in the situation and coming home and saying, "Oh yeah, he didn't pay me, but he's going to pay me next week. And don't worry, I'm going to make sure." You can go down that hole very easily of like hoping things are going to get straightened away. It sucks. It sucks. And it's just like there's millions of businesses out there with millions of assholes, you know, who are just not doing it the way they should be doing it. And, you know, my suggestion would be either take it or say, look, I'm going to come back when you finish paying me. You know, pay me and then I'll consider coming back. But because otherwise, this guy's just going to let you do this all the time. You know?
Right.
But he ain't going to get better. That's for sure. No matter how smart he is, if this is the way he runs, this is the way he's always going to run. I don't think people change. Okay.
Just as a sort of a side thing here.
Go ahead.
We get a lot of these things, people asking us for quite sort of personal advice. Don't listen to the three of us, really. We do we do this show for entertainment purposes. Please don't make life decisions based on us three idiots.
We've had people do that, you know. You know, we have had people, like, probably ruin marriages from the advice that we've given them.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I'm not, you know, saying names, but I'm sure that we've ruined relationships, we've ruined businesses, and we've ruined relationships. So, you know, but that's what you get for listening to us, for Christ's sake. I mean, we are the number one knife-related podcast on this germ-infested planet, so of course we're going to ruin some of your relationships. I mean, what do you expect? You know, God. This one comes from LCA Knifeworks. Hey, y'all, I have a dilemma for you. A couple of hitches ago, I had a booth at a craft fair. And did very well selling my knives and other hand-forged items. A man walked up to the table, an old Southern lawyer type, who knew a little, quote, little. We talked for a while, and when I'm telling him my sharpening process, he proceeds to ask which of my knives are the dullest. He takes out a bowl cutter off the table, pulls out a 400-grit stone he's carrying in his pocket, and he starts raking the knife across the stone.
Oh.
I nearly lose it and not so politely tell him to buy the knife. If he wants to sharpen it, then he can see how he sees fit, or leave the table and don't come back. How do you keep them from catching it? How do you keep from catching a charge? As in, how do you prevent yourself from getting arrested when someone does something like that? I love people to be able to hold my knives. They are more prone to buy them. It makes me want to put a glass case display, however, and I know that that can turn a lot of potential customers into window sharpeners. Thanks, Lee. Guy walks up to the table. Grab, which one's your dullest one? Let me fix it for you.
I'm shaking inside already. Any sort of confrontation, it's a fault of mine. I'll just run in the opposite direction of any sort of confrontation. And if this were to happen, I'd die. I don't know what I'd do. I'd probably be so polite to him, you know, whilst he continues doing it.
All right, well, this is all done. We're
to my own detriment. Exactly. So yeah,
let's talk about it, and then let's do a role play at the end of we talking about it, because I don't know how polite you're going to possibly be.
Okay, so you're going to pull out your 400 grit stone.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm going to say something like, "Oh, that's a lovely stone."
Well, let's do it now. Let's do it now. Talk about it.
That's a lovely stone. I mean, I'd prefer if you wouldn't, you know, sharpen my knife on your stone, just because I don't want you to cut yourself here, you know.
Well, which one of these is the dullest?
I'd like to think they're all quite sharp. I mean, they're all pretty sharp. I don't think any of them need sharpening.
Well, I'll be the judge of that. Let me pick this one up here, boink, and then. This ain't so sharp. And then...
now I'm just dying seeing that. Now I'm like, wow, you clearly know what you're doing. I'd be the worst person in that situation.
Don't worry, these 36 grit scratches are gonna help with the food release.
I honestly don't know what I'd do. I'd hide under the table and I'd
really.
I'm terrible.
Well, what would you do, Mareko, besides...
I have no fucking idea.
You'd kill somebody.
I'd probably be on the verge of killing somebody.
Yeah.
No, obviously that doesn't merit death or anything like that, but that, I don't know, people's audacity. I think, and it comes back to what we talked about a little while ago a few episodes back, I believe. People want to be seen as knowing something. They want to be acknowledged for being knowledgeable. Because I guarantee that's exactly what that old man is. Which one's your dullest one? I'll help you out.
Right.
It's like, no, sorry. Get your fucking hands off of stuff. Or at least get your stone off of the knife. I don't know what to do in that situation. I'd have to, honestly, I don't do confrontation very well either. And so I just grit and bear it and know that this idiot is not going to buy the fucking knife and just hope for them to get the fuck away from the table as quickly as possible.
Recco, there's no way someone's picking up your knife, pulling out a steel, and you're going to let them touch anything.
Dude, people are fucking idiots.
But you would never do that. You'd never let someone do that.
How would I know that that was going to happen? I mean, I would be shouting at them and like, whoa, 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 whoa. You're not touching that knife to a stone.
The first time I ever met Jimmy DiResta, he was with one of his goofballs. And I've said this story before. This is with one of his hangers on. And I, you know, and the first time I met Chris Zepp was there. We were at Maker Faire. And this goofball friend of his picks up two hammers made by Cliff and John with mirror finishes. And I'm talking to Jimmy, and in my side of my eye, I see this guy pick. He reaches over the guardrail to the table, picks the two hammers up, and starts banging them together. I lit
like a
this
caveman.
I lit this bam, guy bam. Up. I lit this. I mean, it wasn't mine, but I was furious. Right. And I lit this guy up, and I said in front of Jimmy, I never met the guy. I said, "What the fuck are you doing?" I mean, I lit him up, and Jimmy's talked on my podcast about it, and he's like, "Yeah, that's exactly what happened." I said, "What are you doing?" And he goes, "I want to see how hard they are."
Oh,
and I said, "They're fucking hard. They're forging hammers. They're mirror finish. They're mirror faces. They're hard. You don't need to. You never hit hammers against each other." And I fucking tore. I tore this dude up, and then Jimmy turns this guy. Embarrassed, humiliated, and he says, "Am I gonna have to put you in the car?" and like really bad, it was really bad. "Am I gonna have to put you in the car?" And then John Ariani thinks. John Ariani says, "Yeah, Jimmy gonna put him in the fucking cement shoes and dump him off into the Queens River." He thought, he got ice. This guy, gonna get whacked. Jimmy DiResta gonna whack this guy, but people don't really. He thought he knew better, and they think that he was with Jimmy. He thought, well, if I'm with Jimmy, I can do whatever the fuck I want. And I fucking tore this dude. And the picture, if you look at the Full Blast Podcast on Instagram, there's a picture of me and Jimmy and Chris. And then the guy on the end looks like he had like a beaten dog. And that was him. The picture's unbelievable because I just whooped this guy's ass. And Jimmy whooped this guy's ass. Said, "I'm going to put you in the car like a dog." And I still take a picture together. And then fucking, he looked like he got his ass kicked. It was great. But people have, I mean, at Maker Camp, I really was afraid that people were going to grab the friction folders I had. And I made some acrylic cases. But it did the trick. People weren't picking anything up. They would have had to reach from behind to get them, and they couldn't. And
it's called a reach around.
Yeah, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. It's called a reach around. That's correct. That is correct. And they couldn't reach around. So it worked out perfectly for me. But when I first met Mareko, first time I ever met him at Blade Show, I said, "I don't touch." And out of respect, I just don't want to do something or drop something or do something that I'm going to offend the maker or do something that would be detrimental to the sale of their knife. I don't touch.
And I think what we just said there about people wanting to show their sort of, that they know what they're doing, their sort of expertise, I think that's very much a sort of a man thing. And I think particularly with, you know, what we do is seen as quite a sort of masculine thing. So I can imagine when a bunch of guys are together in that sort of environment, surrounded by tools and that kind of thing, they're all just, they're all trying to sort of find out who's the alpha, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
You know, I could see it, yeah.
Are you calling the other people standing around tools or the actual tools?
Well, yeah, either way, either way.
They all, I mean, they're sitting at home watching Forge and Fire talking to their kid and their dog about how much better they can do it than the guy on the show. He's doing it wrong. You're talking to your six-year-old kid saying, he's doing it wrong. You see how he's quenching like that? You know, he's like trying to be fucking tough in front of his kid. He's going to show up to you and he's going to, bring out the 36 grit and try to help you out.
Perfect. That's the perfect analogy of it all.
I fucking hate people. I mean, it's like, it's literally, we're fighting a losing battle, guys. I mean, it's just like, Craig has said it from day one. People! Yeah. You know, it's there. Yeah. It's, you just, I, God bless anyone who does a boo booth and allows people to touch their shit. I would lose my fucking mind. At Maker Camp, someone stole one of my hats. Somebody, like, just decided to steal some shit. So, people are the worst, you know?
Anyway, let me tell everybody, especially our Canadian friends, about MaritimeKnifeSupply.com. They're also Maritime Knife Supply on Instagram. They are the place to get your, well, everything you need. Belts, steel, handle materials, tools, forges, even kilns, everything that you need. They're a Canadian distributor for combat abrasives as well, which we all love, and they sell Rhino Wet and Rhino Stick. They've got it all. Lawrence is a good dude too. So head on over, MaritimeKnifeSupply.com. They've got always got deals on belts where you get 10% off if you buy 10, all that kind of stuff. Go take a look. And, you know, even if you're not in Canada, apparently you can make a saving by, getting it over the border in some sort of... I'm not saying it's illegal. I'm not saying... I don't know what it is, but there's some sort of workaround. So, yeah, go take a look. MaritimeKnifeSupply.com.
There's no workaround. It's all kosher. Everything's fine.
Is it really?
Every time you say something, he sends me a message. It's fine. Everything's fine with Maritime Knife Supply. And he let me know.
I get confused every time. I don't know. I know Canada isn't in America, but it's on the same I don't know what's going on there.
Are we back to kidney stones coming out of your butt situation?
Make your mind up.
Is this the same thing? Kidney stones coming out of your butt? You don't know Canada's up north of us? And just to let you know, Maritime Knife Supply does have brooches. They do have Rockwell testers. They little ones from Matt Parkinson. They have books. Anything you want, he probably has it. Or if he doesn't have it, he'll probably get it. So,
cool.
Maritime Knife Supply. I have another anonymous tough dilemma that I like, if you guys want. This one is anonymous. Hey, guys, I want to say that I love the show, and it sounds like three normal guys shooting the shit with great information. Fine. We're doing a good job. We're trying our best. We're trying to educate you motherfuckers about where your kidney stones come out of. Here's the dilemma, and I'm going to leave this vague. What would you do if you think another maker is claiming to have made a Damascus knife, and after you see it, it looks like somebody else's steel? Mind you, the maker is claiming to have made the steel. You only have a picture, and it doesn't seem like what it is in person. Do you ask for specifics, or do you keep it to yourself? So he sees a knife. He looks at it. He completely knows that this guy did not make this steel for whatever reason. What do you do?
I mean, part of me is thinking, if you're not going to buy it, it's none of your business. But it is, really, isn't it? If he's trying to pull the wool over other people's eyes. I think, you need to just question about it. Say, that, you know, that looks cool. That looks awfully like X maker's knife or, you know, steel. And just see what the reaction is, really, I suppose.
Well, it might not be like design. I mean, let's not just start calling people and saying, you know, I'm not saying designs. I was trying to be vague in regards to where the Damascus came from. Basically what he's saying is this particular steel that he's claiming to have made looks like it was bought.
Okay. Yeah. What can you do? It's, you know, if you're not buying it yourself, there's not really much you can do. And if you think that it's not what you think it is, don't buy it. As simple as that, I think.
What do you think, Mareko?
I mean, I guess I would try to understand why this person wants to kind of intervene. Is it just to make the other person look like an idiot, or just to create some sort of transparency? Because, at what point, like, is it necessary to be, like, the transparency police? And honestly, like... If you're like, we know people who sell steel all over the place. Like, Damn Steel obviously is great. Oh, sorry, I just punched the microphone.
Pumped up about Damn Steel live next week.
I got really excited. But people like our like Bob Rankin and Salem Straub and Baker Knife and Tool, like, they all sell steels that they manufacture themselves. And ideally, if you're making a knife from a steel like that, like, hopefully you're buying it from a credible enough of a manufacturer that when you say, oh, this I made this knife from steel manufactured by Salem Straub, that it adds a little bit of a little extra something to somebody and or to the potential client. And if you're buying some shady ass steel, then I don't know why you would want to spend the money on it. Obviously, maybe for the aesthetic quality. But two, it's just like, also, why would you want to claim that as your own? But at the same time, it is very possible for people to follow a recipe and make the, you know, people like Salem do teach classes. Jason Morrissey teaches classes. A lot of people teach classes on how to make Damascus. Bill Burke teaches classes. And the thing a lot of people do after they take a class is they turn around and regurgitate exactly what they had just learned. And they'll do it probably for a while until they finally, like, either decide to settle on something else or figure out a way to tweak the pattern a little bit to kind of make it their own. So that is also not uncommon either. But I don't know. If you're buying steel, hopefully you're buying it from somebody who does a good enough job that you're excited to promote and say, I got this. I made this knife out of some Salem Straub steel or Bob Rankin steel. And people are going to be like, oh, wow, that's great. That's very cool. I feel good about that because either they know about Salem or somebody else, or they honestly, they also don't, but potentially couldn't. But I think it's important that, yeah, just having that transparency. And but at the same time, if you're not going to ultimately buy the thing, like Craig was saying, like, you're just being like a weird, like, knife Karen in a way.
Knife Karen.
Ooh, a knife Karen. Ooh, a knife Karen. I love a knife Karen. Well, knife Karen. There are a lot of knife Karens out there. There are a lot of knife Karens out there.
Yeah.
I years ago, a friend of mine came in. He wanted to bring in his knives to show me, and he was very proud of a Bowie knife that he got from a knife, you know, a small knife convention, and he was proud that he paid $75 for it. And it's Damascus, and he showed it to me, and it was a total banana. And you could see, like, and I'm not Mr. Damascus, but at the same time, I know when I see where a MIG welder has been. You know, I can tell when, you know, there's like MIG weld in there. And I was looking at it, and this guy didn't care, and he didn't know, and he's not a connoisseur, and he was glad to get a deal, and he knows that he got Damascus, and wherever it came from, he didn't really care, he didn't really know. And there are people who are that way. It's the same as the dude who brought the, you know, tried to sharpen someone's knife. There are people out there who they don't know, they don't care, and they want to be involved. And, you know, you can target those people with a better deal on knives. You know, that's that's part of this whole custom knife game. Is there are some people who are, you know, you're buying knives from some people because the price is right. And you know, why is the price right? And what are the reasons? And if it's Damascus, what are the reasons? And maybe you can look past the fact that this came from some, you know, like, you know, dump, whatever. But I mean, I'm still getting past knife Karens. I was actually going to talk about knife Karens.
That's making the title this week. So this week's title, I think so far, is Butt Caps, Tang Nuts, and Knife Karens.
Oh, that's a good one, dude. That might be your best nut title. Some of them.
Best work yet.
That's a good title. What would be a knife? Let's have a little game right now. Let's finish the show off with a game about what would you refer to as, and who would be fit under the... Actually, you know what? Let's throw this out to the audience. Who would fall under, not who specifically, well, what kind of characteristics would fall under being a knife Karen? A knife Karen. And I'll start off by saying I was talking to a guy who was bitching about business and knife business. And he says to me, well, I should have been, you know, next time I'll be the son of a rich person, you know, blaming the fact, you know, basically saying that the people who are doing well in this business are you know, trustafarians. You know what I'm saying? Like they come from the trust funds. That would be a knife Karen, someone who blames people's success on the fact that their, you know, their parents were wealthy.
Yeah. Oh, I could do that if I didn't have to do this first or something. Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
I love a knife Karen. Well, what would you give me some knife Karen? What would be a knife Karen, Rekha?
Oy, oy, oy.
Is that forged? It's not even forged. It's not even forged. You know who's a knife Karen? Nate Zimmerman's a knife Karen. Just kidding, Nate. Just don't fucking start sending messages. This isn't going to be another fucking thing. But that would be good if it was forged. Knife yeah. Karen. Knife Karen. Nice. Love knife Karens.
We love it. We love it. Okay, should we call it a day?
No, you got to come up with a knife Karen.
Yeah, I can't think of a
on
knife
spot,
Karen.
I can't. No.
Oh, well, I had a knife Karen. I was at a charity event this past week, and this guy said to me, he's like, oh, your colors are fine, but you should be just making wood-handled knives. I'm fucking knife Karen. It's a knife Karen. Sticking your nose into other people's business is a knife Karen.
Okay, next week I'm going to have a bunch of knife Karens. I like
yeah,
this. This
and is the
a
listeners...
New a new part, yeah.
This is a new bit. What is... Who would fall into
should
the...
Should we ask the audience, too?
We, of yeah. course, ask the audience. Write in what you would... The kind of person that would fall under a knife Karen.
And let's not be specific with
yeah,
people.
Don't
let's not call people
start,
out
yeah, don't say
like Jeff just did.
Nate
you know, that's a bit more
Nate
tact
Zimmerman.
Than that.
You know, what I love, you can't think of anything off the spot. I bet I can just give me a second. Don't we have an ad to run? We got to do Damasteel.
Well, I'll tell everybody what we're doing for Damasteel next week. So it is the Damasteel Chef Invitational. I believe it's let me just check the date because I'm not sure it's next week, you know. Let me just check.
It should be the 12th.
This is good. Good day here.
All right, well, I mean, for God's sakes, we're coming up with
a quick Google. Invitational, here we go. If you don't know what the Damasteel Chef Invitational is, they do it every year. It's great where they have great makers that are using Damasteel. They put up their knives in certain categories. People vote for it. But we always do a live show for it, and it's always good fun, and it is. It's November the 12th, 9 p.m., CET, which is Central European Time, November 12th. So that's going to be around about sort of 4 p.m. New York time, that sort of 3 p.m. New York time. Just have a check on your calendars. But yeah, it's always good fun. So we get the other makers coming in, and it's all video as well, so you can watch it live. It's really interactive. Ask us questions, have fun with us. Ask the other makers questions as well, which is always good. And just come and just see some of the work that these people are doing, because they're making incredible stuff with Damasteel. And we all know that it's special stuff. It's high-end stuff. And yeah, we can get you a discount too if you go to damasteel.se and set up an account. If you use Knife Talk on checkout, you'll get 10% off your purchase. And that can be quite a significant saving. But yeah, go take a look. The Damasteel Lab on Instagram too. So you'll see the kind of stuff that you'd see for the Chef Invitational. But it's always good. I mean, Fingal will be there. He'll be drunk within 10 minutes of the show starting because he'll sell out his knives.
Sells in five and drunk in 10.
Exactly. Sells in five, drunk in 10. That's his game. Yeah, yeah. It's always a good show. So we'll post in the week how you can watch it, and I'll post the link on how you can register, because it's free. It's free to attend. It's a virtual event, absolutely free, but you do need to register. So I'll put that link in the description here. So make sure you click through and register for it. And honestly, come and join us, because it's the highlight of the year for me.
By a mile,
because we just have so much fun. It's always good.
I have some knife Karens.
So go for it.
All right, like. When the person says, if I had all your tools, I could make those knives.
Yep,
that's a knife Karen. That's yeah. a knife Karen. If only I had a power hammer, then I could forge Damascus.
Yeah,
that's yeah. a knife Karen. I love the knife Karens. So easy. It's as easy shooting a fish in a barrel. Just basically yeah. give me your asshole and I'll tell you you're a knife.
It's
Karen.
Quite okay. No, thank you. So listen, in the comments on this Instagram post, which if you've taken a link from this to go and listen to the podcast, send us your knife Karens, examples of knife Karens. That could be fun.
In the DMs. Put them in the DMs. It's more fun yes. that way. Because yeah. you guys start fights in the comments. I don't want that.
Really?
Oh, okay. So you gotta deal with these guys. You put them in. Everything goes in the DMs. It goes in the show. It goes in the DMs. You put it in the comments, you get nothing.
Fair enough. Well, it's been nice to come back after my little break. We started off very seriously. We soon got back into the swing of things.
Yeah.
It was a good show. Thank you all for listening. We shall speak to you all again. Bright and early next Monday.
Is this the after show now?
This is the after show, yeah.
So for the Damasteel Invitational, it'll be Saturday.
Yes.
And I cannot wait. I cannot wait.
So I think it's the same time for you guys.
3 o'clock.
Central European time is an hour before here. So I think it'll be the same time. Yeah.
Now we're going to be...
Wait, 3 o'clock what? Eastern?
Eastern Standard. So the
time
we started,
our normal recording time.
Right.
I see.
Yes. Right. Yeah, okay. Right. And God damn. So we're going to do video feed again, right?
It's video. Yeah. So I'm doing a trial run with him again this week. We've got a schedule of roughly when people will be joining us, but it's going to be very loose again like last time. And and Dharmasteel, they've got something big to announce as well. I don't even know what that is yet. They're going to tell me this week. They were very secretive when I spoke last week about it. And they've put a lot of hard work in again, so it's going to be fun.
I hope they let me submit my knife. I haven't heard a thing. They said they would. They sent me a piece of steel to fix the piece of steel that didn't work out. But, I mean, you know, I want to
You're going to be brown bagging it.
No, not brown bag. No, I want to compete. I want to compete, for fuck's sake. I need a one win, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, when I speak to him this week, I'll say, yeah. I'll make it happen.
But of course. Yeah, oh God damn, this is so fun. I just remember the funniest part. Every episode is fun, but the funniest part, and you couldn't see it when you listened back, was the guy who kept muting himself. Every time he came back on, and he was just pulling his fucking hair out, and it was so funny. Oh. Remember that?
Yeah, he was in Denmark or something like that.
He was an incredible knife maker too. These are no fucking slouches, and he's just like ripping his goddamn hair out because he can't figure out a way to hear anything. Yeah.
And that's another great thing about the show, because I mean, this is a bit of a community here with this podcast, and we generally know each other. We've seen each other's work. But when we do the Chef Invitational, we see work from people, you know, we'd never sort of heard of, and and some of it is always, it's always special stuff, so it's going to be fun.
Will you be back in your studio?
I will be, so I'm traveling back, I think Wednesday. I think Wednesday I'll be back in France, so yeah.
Didn't you have some sort of, like, light show the last time? There's one year, didn't you do, like, some, like... light show with celebrations and stuff like that?
That was when I was in my old studio before we moved house. Yeah, because I had like LED lighting in there, so we were at the end of it. Bit of a disco, yeah.
That was a fucking great show. I'm gonna wear a jacket and tie.
Oh, nice.
We should dress up.
I will be in the car with a jacket and tie. You can guarantee it. And nothing and nothing from the waist down. Dick out. Dick out.
Dick out.
I'm gonna have tucks and tails and dick out.
Yeah, I've got to put Pear on the spot again because I've managed to do it the last 2 years. Because they've asked me to the introduction to come onto the main stage thing. So I need to think what I can do.
God, you fucking twist him so hard every single time. It's hilarious. P.S. I love. I don't remember in the last ones if you were able to kind of like record that, how you do such a good job with him, because he's always so slightly nervous. You know what I mean?
Well, he's got a lot on. Technically as well, there's a lot to do as well. So, you know, they've got their hands tied there. But he's always good sport.
He's great. I tell you what, every knife show should, Blade should do this. Because you get guys from the Philippines, Australia, all over the United States, and Europe, and Canada, all over the world. Mm-hmm. And it's such great technology, and it's just like, it's such a fucking great event. And the best part is because you record it, Craig, and we put it on as a podcast. Mm-hmm. It's so much more interesting.
Yeah. No, it's good. I'm looking forward to it.
A highlight of the year for me, besides the All Beef Review.
Yeah.
Oh, God damn. The All Beef Review is coming up, guys. We're in November.
Do you know what? 7 weeks till Christmas. It's mental.
Oh, shit. We got to get the All Beef Review started right now. So if you're listening to this podcast, you have to send me your fucking beefs. We need the All Beef Review. This has got to be the best All Beef Review of all time. So, Karen, I'm taking Knife Karens and Beefs. Taking All Beef Review, including Knife Karens.
Nice.
So send in your All Beef Review into the demo, into the DMs, and then headline, you have to put it all for the All Beef Review. So I got to start promoting that, because, goddamn. You think about the first All Beef Review we had. Do you remember that one guy who was like, "Oh, fucking Mary Poppins"? I remember. Yes, do you remember that guy?
Yeah. Fucking hell, Kavner.
If somebody ever did a highlight reel of this show, we could easily have two or three hours of just
of me wheezing and snorting,
wheezing laughter, wheezing with laughter. God damn.
That would be an awesome show, yeah.
Somebody,
yeah.
If you're listening to this and you want to put together a highlight reel, then do it. We'll go hook for you it. Up. Yeah. We'll love it.
Yeah. So what's been going on? What are you listening to? What are you watching? What's happening in the world?
What's going on, Rick? What are you listening to?
What am I listening to? I just finished an audiobook called Raising Good Humans, which is pretty good. Talking about, like, kind of your own, like how each parent brings their own past experience and their own shit from their upbringing and stuff to, you know, raising kids and stuff. And so they're taking that in consideration and ways to work through and mitigate some of the issues you might be struggling with or past, I guess, what do they call them? Not traumas, but I mean, there might be some past traumas, but also just past like ways of modes of operating and breaking kind of like those. God, I can't think of the fucking
cycles.
Word right.
Bracing
cycle,
cycles.
Yeah. Not, I wanted to say tradition, but it's not a tradition in a positive way.
Yeah.
Tradition. That's a shut the fuck up.
Breaking. That's
my
the,
dad did it. His father did it, and I'm damn sure gonna do it.
That's, yeah. That's huge. Breaking the cycle is a huge thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Breaking
the
cycle. So it's a good book. It's an easy listen and probably an easy read. It's short, but it's packed with a lot of really good info. So anybody who might be interested in something like that, Raising Good Humans is a good audiobook. What are we watching? We're watching The She-Hulk on Disney Plus. We just started also watching Andor, which is also on Disney Plus, which is another one of the Star Wars prequels. And what else are we doing? Oh, we started watching, what is that, on Netflix, the Vikings series. That follows like the stuff from History Channel. Here was it. History Channel closed it down and then Netflix picked up and kind of where they left off and started a new series, with like Leif Erikson and stuff like that. That's where we're at.
Cool. I tell you what I've watched, which you mentioned a few weeks ago, The Watcher. I think Mareko, you mentioned it, didn't you? A few weeks
no.
back. I
no,
thought you had.
No.
Oh, right. The Watcher. It's good. It's Naomi Watts and who's the husband? I can't think of the husband's name. He's been in loads of things. But basically, it's a true story about people buying a house. I think it was in Minnesota.
Okay.
And all these crazy things start happening in the house. And it turns out the people who sold the house, they didn't disclose it and they took them to court and all the rest of it. But it's really good. It's a bit of a letdown in the ending, but it's the build-up is really good. Very good.
Is it Bobby Cannavale?
I don't know his name. Big Italian-American.
Yeah.
Yeah. He looks like the brother off something else.
The other Italian dude?
Yeah.
Hey, yo!
Yeah, they all look the same. What's that?
Oh,
what's
Jesus!
That American show from like the 90s?
Sopranos?
Raymond. Everyone loves Raymond. He looks like the brother from that.
He loves Raymond. Yeah. Well, baseball season's officially over. World Series was great. And unfortunately, the fucking Astros won. So I'm sending you out sending congratulations to Nick Key. He's a listener to the podcast, and he's also on Shop Sounds. He's a big Houston Astros fan. So fuck you, Nick. Just kidding. But actually, the Philadelphia Phillies did an awesome job, and I'm actually going to have Jesse Killian and Butch Sullivan on Full Blast Podcast this week, and we're going to talk about Philadelphia. We're going to talk about the Phillies. We're going to talk about their knife making, and it was a great World Series. It was an awesome baseball season. The season was really awesome. A lot of letdowns, but it was a lot of fun. And I'm kind of sad it's all over, to be honest with you. But today was the New York City Marathon. So my wife and I have been watching the New York City Marathon for years. And I did it 9 years ago. So we watched this morning, and it was great. It was super hot out, which there's one guy who was in first place. And then, poor fucking guy. You know, when you're running 26 miles, sometimes you got to go to the bathroom. So they're the lead car. So you're the lead guy. And then you see him kind of clutch his stomach. and run to a porta potty.
Oh boy.
The lead car stops. The cameraman stops. And then the people talking say, well, you know, sometimes you gotta go to the bathroom. And then I'm talking to my wife. I'm like, I'm saying, hey, Hill, he's the leader. He went to the shitter. He went to the bathroom. And so then all of a sudden you're watching this guy and you're thinking, in your mind, the first thing you're thinking of is, well, how long is he going to be in there? And then you can gain if he's going to take a leak or he's going to take a shit.
He's taking a shit.
You have no idea. So the mental clock, countdown clock is like, they have the camera on the porta potty. This is the number one guy.
The countdown.
There's a mental countdown. And then they're saying, well, you know, sometimes it happens. It'll happen. There are runners who say, if you have to pee, just pee.
Yeah,
just pee while you're running.
Sure. And if you're leading the marathon, you just pee, surely.
Well, this dude clutched his stomach. The leader ran in the bathroom, and I said, it's not looking good, Al. And then you're counting down because you're just like, and then as he gets out faster than you think, and then my wife turns to me and goes, well, he clearly didn't wipe. I mean, there's just no way. There's no way. And he keeps going, and he keeps going, and then he starts to kind of falter, and then he ended up passing out. So
because he didn't wipe, and he was running with mud in his cheeks.
Well, he might have had, it might have been dehydration most likely, but it was really kind of sad to see this dude who was like, he had a pretty good lead too. Yeah. But he was probably, I would say, 17 miles in when, I mean, he had a pretty commanding lead, and then bathroom. And as soon as you went to the bathroom, you're just like, shit isn't elite. If you're going to the porta potty, it's hard to be elite when you got to go to the porta potty in the middle of a marathon.
Poor guy. But the whole world watching.
Oh, God. You're just like, oh, the cameraman's just pointing at it. What is the cameraman supposed to do? There's nobody else there. He's the lead guy. You're pointing at the fucking shit.
The producer, the producer's in his ear. Just stay on the porta potty.
Cut to somebody up. Well, there's no other car. I mean, you're with the elite pack. What do you do? So
he steps out of the porta potty and he's like wafting around his nose. I give it 5 minutes before going in there, guys.
you see him waving in front of his ass. He goes, oh, that feels so much better. But it clearly he obviously, I mean, you can tell because another, 5 minutes later, he fucking dropped on the, street. And then all these police were trying to resuscitate him. And Hillary's just like, yeah, boy, I had dehydration. So he must have had explosive diarrhea and then tried to keep going. And it wasn't happening for poor bastard. And he's going to go down the history in the annals of history as not having making it. But it was fun to watch anyway and seeing the different parts of the New York City Marathon. So
yeah,
I won't do it again.
Nice. Well, okay, that's a show. Thank you all for listening again. Yeah, keep track of us on Instagram this week because we're going to put more details of the Darmsteel Chef Invitational. But I will put that link in the bottom there so you can sign up so you're all set, ready to go. And we look forward to actually seeing you. And you can see us, you poor bastards, next week. Bye for now.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Save big money on new windows now at Menards. Update your home with vinyl windows from Geldwin. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on Geldwin windows in store or view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more window deals happening this week. Now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.